is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And you are in the Shame-Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet, your host. This evening, we are going to be talking to Jessica Drake. Jessica is a legendary Wicked girl. She's a celebrated porn actress, and she has won the ABN Best Actress Award 3 times. Jessica, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Oh, happy to have you here. I actually got your DVDs in the mail the other day, beautifully produced. I understand that you wrote, directed, produced, and hosted the DVD series.
I do. I came up with the concept about a year or so ago, and I went to the powers that be at Wicked, and I told them what I was interested in doing. And in the meantime, I did a lot of research and really got a lot of feedback from fans and listeners of my radio show and my podcast, and sort of put a plan together to do the first one. The first one was, of course, the fellatio one, Jessica Drake's Guide to Wicked Sex Fellatio, and we got such great feedback from it that, yes, Wicked has let me do an entire series of my own, so I'm really excited about them.
Well, they've got very high production values. So, you know, I thought that the visuals were really, really nice. And in particular, I loved how the couples that were interviewed about their first time and also how they, you know, liked to engage. Because you sent me the anal sex and the fellatial one. So I thought the couples were... Yeah, I thought the couples were just so candid and I really appreciated that. I like to see real couples interacting around their sexuality because it adds, that authenticity to it.
Well, I think it's definitely more of an approachable, relatable side as opposed to just showing, here, these are two very famous adult stars, and they're going to show you how they have sex. I don't think that is something that the viewers necessarily want to see, and I wanted to give them a more realistic experience. Now, I will say that not everyone in all of the instructionals that I am doing right now, not everyone is a real-life couple. When that's not the case, though, I pair them up very carefully. I only put people together that really want to work together. And I think that is another really great thing because the chemistry definitely reads on camera. And I hire them based on type of sex that they're into. If they don't fit the topic, I'll wait to use them for another volume down the line. I just like to talk to people and really know what kind of sex they're having in their personal life and how they incorporate that into maybe what they do for a living, you know, because we're all very openly having sex on camera. So
right.
It's gone very well so far.
Well, you know, very quickly I want to actually start talking to you about some of your educational efforts. But before we do, maybe our listeners, I'm sure, would love to hear a little bit about your background. I understand you're from Texas. And maybe something about how you ended up in the adult industry I think a lot of people are curious about, you know, as glamorous as it may sound, and what did your parents think, and, you know, those sort of things. So anything you care to share, but maybe a little bit about how you got started.
Sure, yeah. The story about how I got into the adult industry is a bit of a cliche. I'm going to make up what is potentially a very long story a medium story.
Okay.
I was stripping my way through college, and I was at first a liberal arts major with no idea what I wanted to do, but I was dancing in a club in Texas that had feature dancers coming through, and I was already very comfortable on stage, very comfortable with nudity, mine and others, very comfortable with my sexuality. And so I looked at these girls featuring, and I thought, oh, I definitely want to try that. So as I'm doing that, I ended up meeting a group of people that were there covering one of the contests, like Miss Nude Southwest or Miss Nude Texas, and they started to talk to me a bit about the adult industry and then invited me out to White Sands, New Mexico to accompany them on a photo shoot. Of course, I went. It was a director, his wife, a big group of girls, a few makeup artists, some hairstylists, a photographer, and a few assistants. And we got all the way out there, and they ended up not shooting anything because there was a huge sandstorm. So that put us at a restaurant for a few hours in hopes that the bad weather would pass. And I just got to talk to them, and I got very comfortable with them. And they talked a lot about the adult industry and what it had meant to them and how they got to where they were. And so they said, so is it something that you're interested in? Do you want to do a photo shoot? Do you want to do anything like that? And I said, no, I don't really think it's for me. But I kept in contact with them for the next probably year and a half. I made a trip to California that didn't have anything to do with the adult industry. And when I was here, I absolutely fell in love with it, loved the ocean. It was just so scenic. The weather was so great. And, you know, a few months later, I was talking to them more. You know, I was just friends with them. They offered to take me on the set of an adult movie so I could see what really goes on. And I found myself less than 10 feet away from one of my biggest idols at the time, Jill Kelly. And she was having sex with Mark Davis. And somehow they talked me into holding the condoms and lube. And it was such a surreal, they made me a PA, you know, I was an honorary PA. It was such a surreal moment because I did watch adult movies before I got into this business, and I was familiar with the stars, and, you know, I had my favorites, and Jill was one of my top three favorite women, and it was just, it was incredible. But still, I didn't know that I was ready to make the commitment, you know, to take that on. Luckily, I was around a great group of people who, even though they were in the business, and some of them still are at this time, they made sure that I understood that it's something that you can't take back, and it's definitely something that you'll have with you forever. I really owe a lot to them for teaching me that, because I think a lot of people may come into the business a bit impulsively, not really understanding that. But it afforded me a great opportunity to contemplate a career very carefully. And once I was ready to do it, I decided if I am going to do this, I am going to do it to the very, very best of my ability. And I really don't do anything half-assed. So I got in, and I was determined to really make a name for myself, and I'm so happy where I am, and I got an amazing contract with Wicked, the best company in the adult business. They take such good care of me and all of their girls. They've given me a lot of room to grow in other directions other than just saying, okay, today we're going to sign a contract with you. You're a performer and you do these types of sex acts, and in a year or two you'll begin to do this. That was never the case. I've been given freedom all along to make all my own decisions in my career, and I'm very fortunate.
Well, and now it's been about 10 years, right, that you've been in
this?
Yes,
it has been. Yeah.
And now that you're starting to do educational DVDs, have you stopped doing the adult films, or are you still doing
those? Oh, no, not at all. I have no plans to stop being a performer, although I am not performing in the instructional DVDs. It's a choice that I made after a lot of thought about it. And I want to keep it separate, but they are my baby. I write them, I direct them, I narrate them, I do, of course, I do the casting. I literally, my hands are on every part of those instructionals. I still direct features for Wicked as well. And yes, I perform, I star in 7 movies a year, and I imagine I'll do that for a bit longer.
Well, okay. Does your family know? you know, when I was an escort, this is the questions I always got asked. I'm so sorry.
No,
it's, but people do want to know. They always want to know. Do your parents know, and what do they think?
Well, my father passed away about 5 years ago. It's okay. He did know. And my mother sort of has an interesting relationship with the whole entire family. We are not a big family by any standard. My little brother knows. He thinks it's pretty cool. I think he was a little bit curious/concerned at first, but I think that he's very, very comfortable with it now.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like everybody's kind of made their adjustments. But what about romance? Is it hard for a porn star to find a partner, or is that even of interest to you?
Well, I mean, I am actually in a relationship that I've been in for about 7 years now, and I think it's really important to acknowledge that relationships of any kind are hard, no matter what business you're in. But yes, definitely, if you're in a business where you are having sex with people, whether it's on camera or not on camera, it can be very challenging. You know, you have to be very open with what you are and are not comfortable with. I think that's probably the key that I found in my experience. But the relationship I'm in right now, it just works for me. It's a unique relationship. It's different than anyone that I've ever had before. But I think the fact that I've been in it for 7 years speaks volumes.
Oh, I think it does too. It's considering you've only been in the adult industry for 10. That means you were in it for 3 years before you got into this relationship. So that's awesome. I was had been escorting for about 2 years, and I got married. And I was married for the rest of my career as an escort.
So you have experience in that area. You definitely understand where we're all coming from. Then.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I had stepkids too. Now that was a little bit dicey when we had to go to court with the ex-wife. But
we got through it. Yeah, I haven't had to deal with a situation like that. The feedback that I've gotten from people, friends, family that have found out what I do for a living, I would say, for the most part, it has been very, very supportive. If not a bit confused in the beginning, which is completely understandable, they found it hard in the beginning to maybe wrap their mind around it. And what I did with my friends that were really, like, just super cool and really lax about everything, I would offer to bring them on set. I would offer to take them to a photo shoot, you know, just to sort of introduce them to it, so they got an idea of what really goes on and that it is very much a business, very, very much a business. And I'm super professional, and our sets are run in a certain way. You know, we put out some really big budget, high quality adult movies, and you can't get that if you're sitting around in a hotel room doing drugs and saying you're going to shoot the movie on your cheap video camera later. You know, it doesn't work that way with us. So,
well, it's true. It's absolutely true. And you know, I have to say, problems that people think that result. I don't know how it is for you, but I know when I would come home from work, I would, you know, actually be pretty ramped up for sex with my husband.
Well, you know, what I always heard
was, oh, you must be too tired. Like, that was never the case. It was actually just kind of worked in the reverse, where I found that my work actually made for a better sex life at home. Has that been your experience?
Well, people ask me that quite often, and they think that because I am an adult star, all we do at work is sit around and have sex with everyone. And I tell them, no, you know, I only make 7 movies a year, so I don't really...
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I don't ever have to deal with that type of sexual burnout if it were to even be the case. But I do know that when I'm shooting a movie, and I only do things that I want to do with people that I really have chemistry with. So if I've been working, I'm doing a big movie, I can do 3 scenes in a movie. I've done 8 scenes in a movie before. And if I'm really, really turned on and it's a really great scene, I absolutely bring it home with me. Like, I mean, obviously not all the people, but
yeah,
I do come home and I'm like,
the gist.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say, could you finish this for me, please?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I've been in that position myself many times.
Mm-hmm.
So here's another one I got asked all the time, which was about sexually transmitted diseases. And I understand this is actually an area where you're trying to educate people. And, you know, my premise has always been, if people want to learn about how to eroticize safer sex, they really need to come to the professionals instead of trying to come educate us. They should be allowing us to educate them. So
yeah.
I think it's great that you're doing that, and I'd love to hear also just, you know, how do you address those questions where people are all concerned about your health, which I always think is so funny. It's as if there was a dollar bill that would say, now that there's money, I am more likely to, you know, travel with the disease.
Yes.
People have sex for free, and they're not worried about it. But I'd love to hear your take on it and also what you're doing to educate people about sexually transmitted diseases.
Well, first of all, I am in a program to be a certified sex coach, but it's my goal to also be a licensed sex educator. And the first reason that I wanted to be a sex coach, of course, comes with the instructionals, and I do seminars, and I do workshops, and I do have a lot of life experience, and I do have some very specific views on my sexuality, on other sexuality. But I sort of would love to enhance it with some textbook knowledge, so I've been doing that. My secondary reason for becoming a sex educator is because I do some work. I run my own nonprofit organization, and down the line, I would really love to incorporate HIV/AIDS awareness into the trips that I'm doing in third world countries. Every time I go anywhere for a charity trip in a country, that it's just astounding to me to understand the rate of HIV/AIDS that they're experiencing in that country, the percentage of children that are born with it, how many of those will seroconvert versus not seroconvert, and what people can do to help. When you think, well, you know, you need to be educated about using a condom, some of these countries, you can't educate people on how to use condoms when it's impossible for them to even get condoms. And it's a really, really bad situation. I seek out women's health clinics whenever I make these trips, and I am talking to a company that I hope will donate large volumes of condoms to some of my trips. I just want to distribute them to the women's health clinics. That's one of the first things that I would love to do. As far as local and my safe sex practices, I think it's really important for everyone to realize there is no such thing as safe sex. It's safer, but it is not safe at all. It's really not. And I do...
Unless you're stuck in front of your computer.
Exactly.
That's about the only safe sex
which I am right now.
On.
So I guess I'm having a bit of safe sex right now. unless you're doing something like that, I mean, there are so many risks. And there are risks of STIs that a condom will not protect you against.
Sure.
And I think that there are a lot of myths, a lot of old wives' tales and things like that, especially with unfortunately, the generation that is just now beginning to have sex. So what I do in my job to make me feel safer is I have chosen for my entire career to only work with condoms when I have sex with men. And
how did you do that?
I told everyone I would only shoot movies and use condoms. And Wicked is the only company in the heterosexual adult industry that is 100% condom only. I think Wicked went condom only maybe 10, 11, 12 years ago. And
I did not know that.
Absolutely. And now there are a lot of things that we could argue here. I do have sex with a condom. I have vaginal and anal sex with a condom, but I do blowjobs without a condom. And
I
do take a facial. So there are some gray areas for debate, but I say that's my choice. I'm doing what makes me more comfortable and what makes me feel safer.
As far as risk goes, certainly vaginal and anal is where most of the risk lies. And a lot of people do argue that coming into contact with HIV in the mouth could be problematic if you had a cut from flossing or brushing, but that there are a lot of digestive enzymes in your mouth that would probably kill the virus because it's not very virulent.
Right. It's a very fragile virus, and that's something that I think a lot of other people don't think about as well. I think many people get caught up in the fear, and I would really like to be able to educate, this goes back to my nonprofit, but educate people that it is not a death sentence and that there are things that can be done. There is a great program online right now about what 40 cents a day can do, and it basically supplies antivirals to a person. 40 cents a day, and they call it the Lazarus effect, and it turns people's lives around. And so that would definitely be something that I'm interested in teaching people as well, not just prevention, because unfortunately for some it is too late, but coping, you know, living with it, and how not to pass to your child or your sexual partner. So something that I feel very strongly about.
I think it's fabulous that you chose to only do this with condoms, because there certainly have been some scares in the adult industry for people who are carrying the C card and think that somehow or another makes them immune, and then, you know, they wind up HIV positive, because obviously it takes a little while to seroconvert. So you can come out with a clean test, and, you know, if you've had an exposure within the last 3 weeks or so, it might not show up.
And that's another thing that not just me, but I've noticed there are other performers that are doing this as well. The industry standard is a fresh test every 30 days. And what we are tested for is chlamydia, gonorrhea, every so often it's a test for syphilis, and then PCR DNA test for HIV. I prefer to be tested every 2 weeks, and I prefer my partners that I perform in scenes with to be tested a bit more frequently as well. So if I notice that I'm booked to do a scene with someone and I ask them, or the producer asks them when the last date they were tested, I say, oh, would you mind getting a fresh test for me? You know, peace of mind. I mean, really, it's my life. So
well, a lot of this is really about valuing yourself. And I'm sure that's a message that you carry into your educational efforts as well.
Definitely. I think it is very important. And I think that, you know, there are so many stereotypes about this business, and there are so many people that are completely disillusioned about, oh, poor performers, and we have to do this, and we're taken advantage of. Did I at any time lose work because I wanted to work with a condom? Sure. It happened a few times. I even had a woman question my initial decision, because I did my first scene with a condom. Like that's how apt I was about this.
Yeah.
And I had someone question me, and she was like, "Are you sure? Because you'll never be a big star." And when she said that to me, I made it my business to be the biggest star I could possibly be because of it. Not to spite her, you know, just because she told me I couldn't. So naturally, I wanted to.
Yes. Well. You know, I think that it's fabulous that you set your standards, and you know, that makes, to me, put you in a position to be a fabulous educator, because the whole thing is about helping other people find out what their standards are and then stick to them.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
And I think everybody has to find what's true for them.
Yes.
What's true for them, what works for them. I know one of the other things that you are educating people about is what they can anticipate learning from a pornographic film that might be of value to their sex life, and what they definitely do not want to believe or try to extrapolate to their personal sex life when they watch a porno. And I would love for you to go into that a little bit and help our listeners understand the do's and don'ts of watching porn.
Well, I mean, I think that it's important to acknowledge that there is great porn out there and there is porn out there that is not so great. I was really fortunate when I first started watching adult movies. It was from the father of a boyfriend. You know, we would go into his bedroom and we would get his movies and we would watch them, but they were great. They were really, really great movies. But at the same time, I realized that when I was doing the store signings and everything, I would have women come up to me and they would say things like, you know, my husband really wants to have anal sex and I see you do it in your movies, but I just can't, there's something wrong with me because it just won't go in like that and I don't know how to do it. And I feel really bad when I hear that. And I definitely take the time and explain to them that it's movie magic. And what you don't see is the practice pokes, you know, just working it up. You don't see any of that. And long before the camera is ever rolling on me having anal sex, I've already had anal sex off camera right then. I mean, obviously during the scene, of course, but because you have to get warmed up and things like foreplay are very important. And our scenes might not be that long due to runtime or cable requirements or hotels that only buy movies that are a certain length. But right. I mean, it's really important to do all of the extra foreplay. Women are not instantly aroused. There is a buildup. Every woman is different. Unlike sometimes in the movies where the panties drop and it's on. You know, sometimes
right.
It does happen that way. I mean, sometimes it happens that way for me. Other times I need 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes of foreplay and oral sex. And, you know, sometimes it gets so great when I'm caught up in all that that I don't even have the actual sex part, you know, if I'm getting off. Another thing that I try to teach people, and I give a seminar for couples as well, and that's where I talk about this because I think it pertains to both guys and girls. I don't think any guy should ever give a woman a first-time facial without discussing it first. Like, in no situation. Because guys...
For our listeners, I think most people are going to know what a facial is, but maybe you could explain it for those who don't.
Sure, it's when the guy ejaculates on the woman's face. It's
right.
Not what the woman gets when she goes to a spa.
Yes, exactly.
It can be taken several ways. It can be a very, very intimate act in that it's something that you're only going to let this particular person do with you. Some women feel that it's very submissive, that their guy is just dominating them and marking their territory when they do this. And I love that. I happen to be one of those women that really enjoys it. I did before I got into the business, though. It was my own personal preference. And I think that what is good, when you're watching an adult movie, I love it when couples come to me and say, you know, we were watching this movie and we got dressed up and we acted out this scene. And over the years, I've had so many people tell me that, particularly when I do a sex scene with a guy dressed like a cop.
Yes.
They're like, yeah, we recreated that. It was great. Or when I get a woman that says, you helped me have my first threesome because I watched one of your scenes just so I could sort of figure out what to do with that other girl, you know. I think that something else people can learn from adult movies, it's while regular, spontaneous sex, natural sex, straight out of your blue jeans or whatever you're wearing is good, you should also make the effort to get dressed up, whether it's role-playing or, you know, make yourself feel really sexy for your partner. It goes both ways. Men and women should do this. I'm not just insinuating that it's the woman's job. But I think it's really important to occasionally do that, especially when you've been together for a while, you know. And if you're getting ideas from porn on how to dress up, that's great. Do some role playing, wear some crazy high heel shoes, as long as you can stand up in them.
Yes. Well, so let me see if I've heard you right, because then it sounds to me like some of the role playing and reenacting some of the fantasies and storylines that might, you know, turn somebody on when they're watching a film. People have a high success rate with that. But when they're trying to actually emulate some of the specific sex acts, like just spontaneously ejaculating into a woman's face without knowing whether or not she finds that appealing, or
yeah,
trying to engage in anal sex without the proper foreplay, that's usually a prescription for disaster, or at least a certain amount of disappointment for people.
Disappointment and discomfort, yes. And so when I started thinking about doing the instructionals, that's one of the biggest things that I took into consideration, was the very first time a woman walked up to me and said, "I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't do it like a porn star." I'm like, "Time out. There's nothing wrong with you." And then I started to talk to her about how it's not like that was the first time I had had anal sex, you know. I had practiced at it. I've sort of been training myself for this. It's something that I really, really enjoy. So I've experimented with my body in that way over the years, and I have in turn become very comfortable with it. But my first time looks nothing like that. But it was really concerning to me, though, that she would feel bad because she wasn't able to do it. So I swore when I did these instructionals that my anal scenes would not ever appear to be effortless. And as a result, I think we have a really great anal instructional. I'm so happy with the outcome of that, because we cover tongues and fingers, and we cover toys, big toys, small toys, and then we cover actual penetration. And I mean, as I'm sure that you know, it's practice and it's pacing and it's our comfort level and it's feedback from your partner, and it's a whole thing. I really like teaching people how to have anal sex.
You really like what?
I really like teaching people how to have anal sex.
Well, now, and that's an interesting thing, because there are, there seems to be more of that taking place nowadays. Is that your sense of it? Do you think that more people are engaging in anal sex?
Well, I mean, I think that either more people are engaging in anal sex, or maybe more people are very comfortable about being vocal about engaging in anal sex. It's probably a combination of both. I mean, 10 years ago, nobody's going to brag on the internet that they're learning how to have anal sex. And I think maybe that's a little bit different now, you know?
Do you think that porn has popularized that?
Definitely. I think that porn has popularized that, and I think that to some degree, porn has lost the taboo that it once had, and more people are seeking it out. More people are very open about seeking it out, and there is definitely an influx of, well, unfortunately, pirated content on the internet, and people who before had to look really hard for specific sex acts, they don't have to look so hard for them anymore. They can find clips of them anywhere, really.
Right. Well,
yeah.
So do you think that that's something that's going to work for every woman, or do you think that some women are more likely to enjoy it than others?
I definitely think that anal sex is not for everyone. If a woman writes to me or calls into my radio show and starts telling me how she's trying to have anal sex for her husband or her boyfriend because it's his ultimate fantasy, and the first thing I do is ask her, is she into it at all? Does she like the idea? Has she experimented with it? You know, is she opposed to it? Is she only doing it for him? some women love anal sex. Some women are mildly curious and can go either way. And other women, it's the farthest thing from their minds. And I think that if you are really convinced that it's not for you and you don't like it, then it's not for you and it's okay, you know. There will be something else that is a big turn-on for you.
Well, so as somebody, you've said that you enjoy anal sex. As somebody who enjoys that, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what it is about it that appeals to you?
I think with me, and this is strictly from my personal preference, I think with me, initially, it was something that I thought was very taboo. I had only seen it in one movie before, but before I had ever seen it in an adult movie, when I was masturbating, I really explored everything down there. So I had already done a bit of anal penetration on my own, and as soon as I saw the only movie back then that I had seen that incorporated anal sex, I promptly told my boyfriend we had to try it. So it's always been something that I was very curious about. Such an incredibly sensitive area. I love the feeling of the initial discomfort, like, ouch, can we make this work? And it turns me on, just the thought of it, so much. And then, of course, once you get in the right headspace, you're a bit more relaxed. And then when I'm turned on, it's on at that point. I often like the feel of being dominated, but I can have anal sex and be the aggressor instead of just being dominated. So it goes either way. I just enjoy the sensation, and that also gave way to double penetration. And that's something that I would really like to do an instructional on, because once you're having anal sex, I find that a lot of women are giving me the feedback that they, of course, enjoy clitoral stimulation at the same time, but they also like vaginal penetration in some way, whether it's fingers, toys. And then they start to say, well, what would it feel like if I were sleeping with two guys at the same time? It's just that I'm in love with the sensation of it.
Okay, and then what about facials? You know, do you think that's an acquired taste? Or, I mean,
it depends on what it tastes like.
To actually cause you to have an orgasm, correct?
Correct. As far as you said facials, right?
Yes.
As far as facials go, I think that there is, if you are into that type of thing, which I am, there's still a time and a place for everything. If I'm having some really great, close, tight sex, missionary style in my bed, and we're grinding, and the last thing I want is for him to jump up and stand on the mattress and come on my face. To me, at that point, it's not entirely appropriate at that point. But I think that in different instances, it can be a fun, appropriate, if you're role playing, if the guy has a fantasy and he just really wants to see his semen on you. But at the same time, I have held seminars where there have been both men and women present, and I have asked them, after I've gotten them comfortable, of course, by a show of hands, how many guys really, really think that ending in a facial is very important. And say I had 100 guys there, 2 or 3 raised their hand. So I think it's not that important. I think a lot of guys are happy to get off. Some guys like to see the product of their enjoyment on their partner. And so, you know, I talk to women when I do the fellatio seminars about, you know, if your guy wants to try a facial and you haven't done it before and it's something that you're not entirely comfortable with, have him try aim for your chin and down. Mm-hmm. There's a bit more, you know, safety control that way, you know. I also advise women to take matters in their own hands, do it themselves, point it wherever they want it. But I do caution them that if they end up with cum in their eye, just they need to be reminded that that's where they pointed it.
Yeah.
If women are afraid of the taste or anything like that, I tell them to turn on the side of their cheek, and you get a great visual because the guy still sees the ejaculate. He's coming on you. It's a huge turn on, but it's right there on your face as opposed to, well, shooting down your throat.
Well, so in pornographic films, the mainstream pornographic films, is there much experience of a woman coming on a guy's face?
Well, I do it as often as I possibly can.
Well, good for you, Jessica.
I think so. I think, and it's a really, this is a very, very tricky thing. There are, in my opinion, there are more instances of girls coming on guys' faces in soft core, when we shoot the soft core versions of our scenes, which usually we shoot along with the scene. So we'll be shooting camera and we'll be shooting only hardcore, which is you can see penetration. Then we'll shoot softcore, which is you sort of close off to camera, sort of the cable version, if you will. And softcore affords me and every other girl that I know of the opportunity to do a lot more grinding and have much better oral sex that way. When you're hardcore for the cameras, you're sort of cheating open. So you're trying to give the camera the best angle that you can. This is one of the reasons that softcore is a personal favorite of mine. So, most guys that are in the industry, they really do make it their business to get their scene partners off. I mean, they have to if they want to stay on my list. I only work with people, though, that know what to do with me. You know, and then maybe I'll try to add somebody to my list and it'll be a little awkward and I'll try to have the talk with them. But how do you articulate exactly the way you want to be made love to or the way you want to have sex or, you know, the harder version of that? How do you have a conversation with someone you're not in a relationship with? It's trial and error, pretty much, you know. And then the guys that are still on my list today are some of my all-time favorites, and they're really sexually open to doing what I want. So it's great.
Well, so and it's interesting. I've watched quite a few porno films, actually, and I haven't seen a lot of female ejaculation on the man's face. I've seen it by itself, kind of, you know, so that you could see the ejaculation. But do they do the so-called money shot, where you do a close-up of the woman ejaculating on the man's face?
Well, I mean, I think that there are some lines of movies, some companies that specifically shoot squirt movies. With us, it's never, and with me specifically, it's never been an intentional thing. I don't go to work and say, I'm going to shoot a squirting scene, whereas some other companies, that they do a whole line of squirt movies. With me, if it happens, it happens. That's great, and, well, I hope they get it on camera. If they didn't get it on camera, maybe it'll happen again. They'll have a better look next time.
Yeah, well, have you noticed there's maybe a little discrepancy in the way that the genders are treated in pornographic films, or does that not seem to be a problem for you?
It's kind of tricky. The guys get paid less than the women do, and in part, I understand that. In my opinion, I think that guys can be in this business a lot longer than women can. I know guys that are still in the business that I watched before I got in the business, and I know they'll be here still when I'm on my way out. Ron Jeremy.
Is he still working? I know he's got a Club Sesso up in Portland.
Well, yes, he is still working. He did He did a sex scene for a movie of ours. We did a parody of the Rocky Horror Show. And he was Dr. Scott. And it was the funniest thing because, you know, his character is in a wheelchair. And during our big group orgy scene, we kept looking up. And he would have jumped up and walked across the room to start trying to have sex with another girl. And we're like, Ron, get back in your wheelchair. You're supposed to be stuck in that thing. It's like all of a sudden he's healed and just running all over the place. But, yes, he is still around.
I guess he really enjoys his work.
Yeah, he really does, too. And he does a little bit of everything, that guy. So he's just everywhere. But for the most part, I mean, I think especially these days, men and women are treated pretty equal. At least where I come from, we're very concerned with both the male and the female actors because we do those bigger budget, you know, acting movies that a lot of people don't do. So as far as on our side, yeah, I think both male and female performers get treated pretty well and pretty equally.
Well, speaking of gender differences or the lack of them, I know that I spoke at Sonoma State University recently, and a couple of terms back when I was speaking there, they actually had done a survey of the classroom about how many of the men were looking at online porn. It was about 99.99%. And how many of the women were looking at online porn regularly. And it was about 65%, which was actually kind of a surprising figure. Now, is that, as you have seen it, that is actually becoming more popular with women?
Well, I think that is the case, and I base my opinion on the feedback that I get from women as I'm doing these seminars, as I'm doing these appearances. But I mean, understandably, that's the environment that I'm in as well.
Right.
So it is very possible those are the people that I'm putting myself in front of. So I do get more feedback from that. But I do have some friends that are not in any way affiliated with the adult industry. Friends that I met and had to in turn sort of bring up what I did for a living because they're recent acquaintances, maybe 2 or 3 years. And to my surprise, they were pretty familiar with what was going on, and they did know some of the adult websites that I started to casually bring up, you know. So, I mean, maybe that is the norm. Maybe it's even higher than that 60-something percent, you know.
Right. So, but that means that when you reach out to people, I mean, you are, like, your educational DVDs are geared for couples, are they not? Or,
yes.
Or, I mean, not, you're not just targeting men.
No, not at all. I am very specifically targeting first women. And very, very close second would be couples. I mean, I think that my anal instructional is a great tool for couples to watch together. But in many parts of the narration, I am just talking to the women. There are plans in the works down the line to do an anal sex for men. But in this one, I imagined talking to a very close girlfriend and teaching her how to have anal sex. I mean, not doing it myself to her, of course, but, you know, just really giving her my insight and the way that I came to have anal sex, you know. In the others, of course, fellatio is geared towards women. Positions is more of a couple's thing, but I really want to create something that women can relate to, and that's part of the reason that I'm so careful with cast selection. I do all of my own casting. I put people together that either are real-life couples or want to have sex with each other very, very much and have requested each other. I try to use women that are more approachable as opposed to, oh, wow, that woman has a lot of plastic surgery. I try to use people that are more relatable. I don't try to use people that are body perfect because there is really no body perfect. You know, I really don't think that there is such a thing. I also chose to represent every ethnicity in this line of instructionals and not do it in a way that it's in your face like a rainbow coalition. I didn't think that was an appropriate thing either, but I just use people that want to have sex with each other or that are great, outstanding couples in real life. And I use people that have been inspirations to me as well. I think one of my favorite people that I've used so far is Bobby Starr. And Bobby Starr did an absolutely amazing job for me. She was in the fellatio edition. Also, Akira was a really bigger name performer than I intended to use, but she's very, very well spoken, and she has amazing anal sex, and she really loves it, and she was dying to work with Mr. Marcus. So I threw them together, and I had a scene that was so hot that as I sat behind the monitor, I realized I wasn't really having to direct them in that sex scene at all. It was just, oh, it was phenomenal. I get really excited when I talk about my couples.
Well, I can tell you really like, you know, your work, and in particular, I think you're really enjoying this, the directing and the producing.
I do. It's something that's different for me, and I love a challenge. And performing to me, it's my passion. It really is. I love assuming roles, becoming a character, making a character, developing a character, memorizing dialogue. I absolutely love that, and I don't plan on quitting that anytime soon. But I have found something, a way to not just sexually inspire the guys that have been watching my movies and masturbating, although I really love them too. I have now found a way to help women and to help couples through what I do. And to me, that's the best of both worlds. If I'm able to be a sexual inspiration to a couple. I mean, I had someone come up to me at the last show that we did here in LA, the convention. It's called LA Exotica. And they told me that I was responsible for their pregnancy. And it was very cool for me to hear that. And over the years, I've had people tell me that. I've also gotten emails from people very recently. I host not just a radio show. I host a radio show on Sirius XM 102 called In Bed with Jessica Drake. And I do that on Tuesdays from 2 to 4. But I also have an online podcast. It's on iTunes called The STFU Show. And on that podcast, I get emails from listeners all the time. And I got the greatest one maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago about a guy and his wife who were having problems with infertility. And they said that after a while, sex just got to be work because they were just trying to make a baby, and that's all it was. And they started watching my movies and acting them out. And, you know, when she was ovulating and when the temperature was the basal temperature was right, that's what they used for their inspiration. And they have two children. And when I heard
that's great. It's a beautiful story.
I love
it. You know, believe it or not, we are out of time. And you're probably going to want the listeners to know how they can actually get a hold of your instructional DVDs and spice up their sex life and maybe start a family, whatever's on the agenda for them. How can they contact you, and how can they order your DVDs?
There are many different ways. We are about to launch guidetowickedsex.com, which is going to be the website for the series. It's almost there. You can also see the instructionals at wicked.com if you're a member, along with lots of my other movies. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/TheJessicaDrake. I tweet everything I do all day. And I also run my own blog. It's very candid. It's at insidejd.blogspot.com. And right now, for anybody that's listening, I'm doing the LA AIDS Walk, so I'll tweet that link if you guys want to donate. That's it.
Absolutely. That's beautiful. Jessica, I'm so glad that you're putting a woman's touch into the educational DVDs, and also just bringing your whole safer sex ethic to the world of porn. I think congratulations, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. You're great.
Oh, well, so are you. So are you. And to my listeners, we're going to be signing off here in the Shame Free Zone. I'll let you know. Next week, I'm going to be interviewing Kathy Labrioli, and she's got a book out called Love in Abundance. We're going to be talking about open relationships. I hope you'll join us. Thank you, and good night from the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?